We begin the parak today, Daf Tzad. Mishaya nasu shtei nashim. Umeit, harishona kodemet l'shniya, v'yoshe harishona kodmim l'yoshe shniya. There's two important introductions that we need to speak about for a moment before we understand what's happening in the parak. There is a concept that we've spoken about in the past, which is called ktuvat benin dichrin, you recall. Ktuvat benin dichrin is one of the tznae beidin that the ketuvah contains, even though we don't actually write it out normally in the ketuvah, but it's taken the same as all the other tznaim. And what it specifies is this: if I have children from another woman, then your children will inherit all of the things that I owed you for your ketuvah. So in other words, if I inherited you in your death, he says to his wife, and that means I've taken in, let's say, 100,000 rands of the nedunya, the money I owed you for the ketuvah, and so on. Now, maybe I have another five children, and I'll only have one child with you. Your concern will be that then when I die, your property is going to be split among all my other children as well, and your child from me will end up with a very small piece of what you had brought from your family into my home. Therefore, what we do is we say, look, anything that came from you goes only to your child. And then what's left is split evenly. Now, of course, he writes this to the children of the other woman as well, to the other woman, so that they're going to have to split what their mother would have received from the ketuvah five ways. And he gives it. Obviously, it's advantageous. Of course, nobody knows how many children there'll be and so on. But this is a tznai in the ketuvah to make a woman feel that whatever she puts into an nedunya, and this, of course, goes back to the father we spoke earlier, in the mesechta, the father feels he's willing to put in because he feels it's not going to be given now to children of another woman. So normally, a father thinks, look, well, I'm going to set my daughter up with $1 million, give it to this joker husband that she's married, and he's going to go marry somebody else, and who knows how many kids they'll have, and they'll all get my money. I'm not going to put a lot of money into this wedding. But with ketuvat benin dichrin, we basically have protected him and made her feel secure, made him feel secure. He'll put more money into this because he feels it's going to his heirs. There's one problem, however, with ketuvat benin dichrin, and that is the second issue we need to discuss. It cannot be mevatel a yerusha d'oraita. Normally, when we have a chov, say have a chov of the ketuvah, say the chov of the ketuvah was greater even than the estate that was left, you'll collect every last dime of the ketuvah. But that's the ketuvah itself. Benin dichrin, if you recall, the clause of benin dichrin in the ketuvah uses the word yerusha. Your children will be yoresh, me, with all of the things that you had brought in and I had inherited from you. Problem is, a Yerusha d'Rabbanan cannot cancel a Yerusha d'Oraita. So since the Yerusha d'Oraita would have been split evenly between all of the kids, suppose if we'll give out the Benin Dichrin, there won't be anything left. There's only enough to cover the two ketuvot, and there's not an extra dollar in that property. Then we cancel ketuvot Benin Dichrin, because we can't have a Yartun, we can't have a Yershun, a Yerusha that's going to be more powerful, Midrabbanan, that's going to cancel the Yerusha d'Oraita. That's called the din of Motar Dinar. If we have one dinar extra that can be split evenly between all of the heirs, then we go through with the Ketuvah Benin Dichrin. But if there's not going to be a dinar left to split evenly, then we cancel the Benin Dichrin. And that's why we wrote it as a Lashon of Yerusha. Now, other elements that Yerusha word implies is also that it's not collected like a chov, which is going to make a lot of nafkaminas, as we'll see in the circuit. But let's begin. We don't have to do everything in advance. So here we start with this typical case. Somebody's married to two women. He dies. The din is that the first woman gets her ketuvah first. Here we're talking about where she hadn't died. So she's kodemet l'shniya. The yorshei harishona are kodmim l'yorshei hashniya, and that's true also if she's collecting the ketuvah. So then this is a typical chov. A chov is a lien, and so obviously the earlier lien is the one that's able to collect first. If after the first lien collects, there's still money to collect on the second lien, which is the second ketuvah, then fine, then the second one collects. The same thing is true of the yorshim. Because what we're talking about over here is not ktuvah ben nedarim. We're talking about a standard collection of a ktuvah, which is a debt and not a yerusha. However, how about if he marries nasata rishona? He marries the first woman, umeta, and then she dies. He's still alive, so now he has inherited her. Nasashnia umetu. Then he marries the second woman, and then he dies. Now there's a problem, because we have the yorshim here of the first woman are coming to collect not their mother's ktuvah, they're coming to collect the ktuvah benin dichrin. The father has already collected the mother's ktuvah. The father dies and has left the estate now to all of his children. So one group of children is coming to insist that they first collect the money from their mother, because their mother died during the lifetime of the father. But the other group of children are only coming to collect the ktuvah as a debt, not as ktuvah benin dichrin. Ooh, now if that's the case, the very fact that ktuvah benin dichrin is a yerusha, it's called a yerusha and it's set up as a yerusha, which means that it cannot stand up against a debt because the yorshim pay the debts. So what good is it going to be a yoresh if first you're going to have to pay off the debts in order to be able to then have the property left to give to the yorshim? Therefore, in this case, we flip it around, because in this case, the woman who is now coming to collect her ktuvah, so then is coming to collect a straight-out debt. But a straight-out debt's going to come first. So even though she's the second wife, since the first wife died during the course of the husband's life, they are going to come first before the ktuvah benin dichrin. So in this case, the nasat rishona meta, nasashnia metu, the second one, if she's alive, or if she then dies after her husband dies, and her yorshim, will always come first before the yorshei rishona, because the yorshei rishona are not collecting with a lien on al debt. They are collecting the yerusha. And so first we have to pay off the debts, then the rest goes to yerusha. Says the Gemara, Meriktani harishona kodemet lishniya, velo katani harishona yeshla, vashniya einla. Now, the language over here bothers the Gemara. Because when it says kodemet, kodemet always means that's how we do it. She comes first. Not that it's enough to actually prevent her from collecting if there was not enough for her. In other words, let's say that she didn't listen to the court. Let's say that she went ahead and she grabbed the property on her own, the second one. So the mashma'ut is that, well, you know, she went ahead and grabbed it, so she keeps it. We're not going to take it from her. If it had said that in cases where the Rishona is the only one that has enough money, that the Rishona yeshla mishniya einla, then that would have meant that Tvisa won't help, and that you can't violate that. It's in that order that you're going to be paid. But kodemet always sounds like, I thought you made the coffee.
It's all nice.
Here I'm thinking that yearly, wow, I got to really thank him for this coffee. Oh my gosh. Oh, next time. So apparently, says the Gemara, Mechlal, the Ikad Mashnia Betavsa, if she had gone ahead and hadn't gone to court, and instead she simply grabs property to take it over, Lo Mavkina Mina, we won't take it away from her. Since in this case we're talking about a collection, because over here we're not talking about ktuvah benin dichrin. The first part of the Mishnah, we're talking about collection of a debt. Both of them are coming to collect their ktuvot. The husband died before either. So in that case, the halacha would be that every baal chov, apparently, although he holds a later lien, he's meuchar, but if he went ahead, shekadam v'gava, he goes ahead and collects earlier than the other guy, so then he was already zocher. Masha gava gava, and we're not going to take it away from him. Says the Gemara, no, I don't see that necessarily follows from this mission at all. The word kodemet does not necessarily have to mean as a matter of procedural law. It could mean as an absolute. Kodemet, my kodemet. Kodemet means legamre. She's absolutely first in line to collect whether the other one had been tofeset or hadn't been tofeset. And by the way, we do see that that is the language that a Mishnah uses when it clearly means it in an absolute sense, and not just in a procedural sense. Because look at this Mishnah. Kiditznan. Ben kodem lebat. So if you're talking about a collection of Yerusha, what are you going to say? Then a Yerusha that a bat collects, the ben can't be motzi from the bat? Obviously it can, because of it, she has no schus b'bakum the ben. In which case, the Tana is able to use the lashon of kodem or kodemet as a matter of absolute. So maybe that's what it means here too as well. As a matter of fact, there's another lashon, there's an ikad diamri, says the Gemara, that actually starts from the opposite assumption. Ikad diamri, midaloka tani im kadmash niyavatafsa en motzi im yadam. That since the Mishnah did not use a language that would allow us to understand that Tvisa helps, because you could have said to us, look, if the second one would come along, then Emotzi Miyada, but then we would understand that the first one comes first. Instead, you say that Kodemet, so the Mashmu'ut, therefore, would be the word Kodemet is absolute, just like it's used in that Mishnah. Bechlal di'ikad mashniyam v'tafsa mafkina mina. The Mashmaut then of the Mishnah would be, here's our starting point, is that we would indeed take it away even from the woman over here who had been Tofeset, in which case, Shma Mina Baal Chov Mulcha Shekadam VeGava Masha Gava Lo Gava, which makes us reach the opposite conclusion than our first approach. So if someone who is owed a debt, remember, we're talking about the ratio of the Mishnah where both women are coming to collect, not a Yerusha, but a Ketuvah. It means that they're owed money like any other Baal Chov. So therefore we could derive from here that if a Baal Chov holds a later lien, and he went and actualized the lien against the property, and now comes along the one who had the earlier lien, he can actually remove it from the person who used the later lien. Says the Gemara in this version, Li'olam emalach, mashigava gava. Actually, I could tell you that perhaps we cannot be medayek that from here. That actually we would not take it away in a case of tfisa. But Aide de Tana, Shniya v'yorshea kodmim li'yorshei harishona. We wanted to say in the seifa of the Mishnah, the halacha of the collection of the Ketuvat Benin Dichrin. Over there you can't talk about Im Kodmu, V'Tofsu, and so on, because we certainly would be Motzi Miyadam over there, because there you're talking about in the Sefer of the Mishnah, a Yerusha that is Meshuvah to pay up a Chov. We'll always collect for Chov against the Yerusha. That's the whole point, that we collect from Nichse Yetomim. So in the last part of the Mishnah, I have no choice but to write the word Kodmin. So since I use the Lashon of Kodmin, Shniyavi Yosha Kodmin Liyosha Rishana over there, so in the case over here where we're not talking about Ketuvah B'nin Dichrin in the Reisha, where the two women are collecting directly their own Ketuvot, or the two heirs are collecting directly the Ketuvot of their mother, not from the father's estate. Okay, secondly, says the Gemara, Shma Mina. Now this is more subtle. Normally when we discuss the din of Ketuvah B'nin Dichrin, as I mentioned to you earlier, we need Motar Dinar. We need to make sure that after the Ketuvah B'nin Dichrin, there's still going to be left over one dinar that can be split as a Yerusha between all of the heirs, evenly. Otherwise, we're being mevatel the Yerusha Dioraita. Right? Clear. For some reason, the Mishnah in this particular instance doesn't mention anything about the Motar Dinar, which is strange. Apparently, what it's saying is that they would be collecting Ketuvat B'nin Dichrin even if there's not a Motar Dinar. Why would that be? I'll tell you why. Because every Yerusha that is going to be paying off a debt, the debt is the Yerusha. By definition. Since in this case there is also a debt, it's not that they're both coming with Benin Dichrin. One is coming with Benin Dichrin and one is coming with a debt. Since I have to pay off the debt first, how is that debt paid? It was paid out of the estate against the Yorshim. So was there a Yerusha Dioraita? Absolutely, there was. Where's the money? What do you mean, where's the money? The money was used to pay up that first Ketuvah, which in this case is the second Ketuvah, the second group. Where did that money come from? It came from the fact that the heirs got the money and paid. Basically, I mean, obviously we don't go through, take it, put it in one pocket, take it out of the other pocket. But what has really happened is the instant the man died, The Yerusha fell to the Yorshim. There was a debt against the Yorshim, which now Beis Din collects for the second group of people who are coming to collect with the contract, namely the ketubah of their mother, who lived. The husband predeceased her, so she lived, and now they're inheriting the ketubah directly. So now you're saying, but there won't be a penny left of the estate if we collect the ketubah b'din dichrin. Where's the extra dinner? What are you talking about? The estate already paid up a massive debt. The second ketubah. That massive debt was the Yerusha. So what's the difference whether you saw any of that money? It's always like that. An heir won't see any money if there's debt against it. So you see from here that the second ketubah is considered to be the equivalent of the motar dinar that's going to be left after the ketubah b'din dichrin. It's a brilliant point.
The
Yorshim, when they pay up, they've paid up the debt that they inherited with the money that they inherited.
They're not obligated to pay
debt. It's a different thing that priat balchov mitzvah we'll see later on the next page. But whatever it is, it's certainly being paid out of the estate. It's not being paid out of their pocket. Right? Okay, so then that means the Yerusha was a normal Yerusha, lots of money in the Yerusha, and it needed to be paid up. So you say, but it was paid up to half of the Yorshim and not to the other half. That's irrelevant. They're wearing a different hat now. They're wearing the hat of the collector, not the hat of the Yorshim. But the bottom line is that it was collected out of an estate which everybody shared. So there you go. A brilliant point. It's subtle, perfect. So therefore, says the Gemara, you see from here, Ketuvah is considered to be Naaseit Motar Lechaberta, that the payment of the Ketuvah is considered to be the Motar Dinar against the Ketuvah B'din Dichrin of the other Ketuvah. Mimai. How do I see that? Midalo Katani, the Mishnah very conspicuously leaves out the words Im Yesham Motar Dinar. And normally when we talk about Ketuvah B'din Dichrin, we mention those words because otherwise it's as if we're just trampling over the Yerusha D'Oraita, which we certainly wouldn't have done. Fine. Beautiful, beautiful point. The third point is Vishumamina, that Ketuvah B'din Dichrin Lo Torfa Mimeshavde. We also see from here that a ketuvat b'din dichrin, which is coming as a Yerusha, cannot be collected against nechasim mishu'ubadim. Because, I mean, even though that's obvious to us at this point, because we've already spoken out clearly, I told you in advance, that the din of ketuvat b'din dichrin is a Yerusha. So obviously heirs can't collect their Yerusha against some property that the father had already sold in his lifetime. That would be pretty awful. Yerusha is whatever is left. Yerusha doesn't go out to be toe-faced. But I might have thought that maybe the way to read, and this we saw earlier, there was a shita, is that instead of saying yartun, yartun meaning will be yoresh, the correct language of the Tanai of B'din Dichrin is yatfun. They will take. Kamashma, no, yartun, they will be yoresh. Okay? So if that's the case, see from here that they're not Torek v'mishavde, because there's no other way to read this. Because Isaac adaiti, tarfam v'mishavde, if you're going to tell me that they can collect against someone who had already bought the property, so now the B'nai HaRishonah can come and re-grab the property from the B'nai HaShniyah, because they're basically like Lekuchot. They went and got this property because of their debt. We were there before you, they could say, with the Tanai of Ketuvah B'din Dichrin. So it's true that a chov will come first, okay, but now we're going to take it from you. So it's a Yerusha that is given the power of the chov, because it's Yatfun. Kamashvan, that it's a straight out, works only with the norms of Yerusha. Matkifla Ravashi says, Ravashi, I disagree with you across the board. I don't see that the Mishnah necessarily means any of that. And here's why I disagree. Mimai. You may be right, but I don't see that you can prove it from this Mishnah. Because let me give you an alternative approach which will let you see that the Mishnah can be interpreted in a way that actually moots your 3 points. Look. Dilma liyola meimalach achat b'chaya v'achat b'moto. Ein lehem ketuvat b'din dichrin. Maybe, actually, there's no ketuvat b'din dichrin in this case. At all. And when it says over here, then, in the Mishnah, that they are kodmim, The mashma of kodmim means, but if there were anything else, we would give it to the Yorshei HaRishonah because of Ketuvat Bedin Dichrin. That was your diyuk. I don't think that's true. I think that what the word means, kodmim, is they get up there. That's what kodmim is. It means you're the one who's put on stage. Doesn't mean that the ones that are coming from the first one are going to get a ketuvah at all. They will get, yes, but not as ketuvat ben dichrin. They will get the Arusha. That's all it means. So what it's talking about is there's going to be money left over after we collect the debt of the ketuvah of the second one. Thank you. Now can we collect our property as a Yerusha? Are we not heirs of our father? Of course we are. So fine, if there's money left, we'll get some. Not because of our mother's ketuvah. We'll get some just like you'll get some. We'll split it evenly. Who's to say that it means kodmim in terms of your ketuvah versus our ketuvah? You're the only ones who get the ketuvah. But okay, can we now get around to maybe inheriting some money from dad? All the action's been in your court. Now let's split whatever's left. That's all that it means. In which case, maybe there's no ketuvah within the three. Okay, so let's forget about that. Now, if you don't accept that, okay, let's say you'll say, ah, come on. Okay, so I'll say, all right, let's even say, ah, come on. Let's even say, indeed, it's talking about the Nindirin. Okay, your second point was, if it's talking about the Nindirin, then we don't need Motar Dinar, right? Because the ketuvah that was paid up as a debt is the Motar Dinar. That's what you said. I say not necessarily. Maybe, let's take the next point. V'chi tema. Maybe you'll say to me, so then, let's first finish up this first point. Let's read that inside, I think that's good. Li'ola me'malokach ha'pechavachat b'moto inam ketuvah b'nidichri. My kodmim, kodmim l'nachala. So then why, you'll ask me, v'chi tema, you'll ask me, why does it use the word Yorshei HaRishona? Lomali. What do you have to say? Yorshei HaShnia are kodmim l'Yorshei HaRishona. There ain't no Yorshei HaRishona according to my interpretation, you'll yell at me, right? Because all that we're saying is they're paid off, and now all of the Yorshim together, not the Yorshei HaRishona, all of the Yorshim together will now split the estate. So you'll say to me, idiot, if it meant what you're saying, it would never use the word Yorshei HaRishona, because there's no Yorshei HaRishona. There's nobody coming to collect the ketuvah b'nin dichrin. So who are these Yorshei HaRishona? I will tell you that the Yorshei HaRishona is just a borrowed term. It means the other kids. Why would we use such a ridiculous borrowed term? Because the Mishnah needed to use that in the Reisha. In the Reisha, indeed, we were talking about Yorshei HaRishona. So, Aide the Tani, since the Tana began in the Mishnah, is talking about Shnia v'Yorshea. So we needed to talk about Shnia v'Yorshea as opposed to the Reisha. Tana Nami l'Yorshei HaRishona. Okay, that's your first point. Second point, even if you disagree with me on this point, second point is like this. You said the second point is Shmamina Ketuvah Naaseit Motar L'Chaverta. Why? Because the Tana didn't bother saying, if there's a Motar Dinar, so apparently you don't need a Motar Dinar. Why don't you need a Motar Dinar? Because we paid off a debt with the Yerusha. No. I can claim to you, Niola Meimalach, Ein Ketuvah Naaseit Motar L'Chaverta. Nonsense. The case over here is simply talking about where there is a Motar Dinar. What? The Tana has to mention every single time he talks about Ketuvah Ben Dichrin, he has to mention every single time the Motar Dinar. And the din over here was that Hakhu Di'ika Motar Dinar. And this Diak, as far as the question of Motar Dinar, the Tana relied on the next Mishnah. The next Mishnah defines the halakha of Motar Dinar. So the Tana waited until then to explain it to us. I'm going to sit here and bash you over the head with it. Every time I talk about Ben Dichrin, I got to restate the din of Motar Dinar. Now, obviously, the third point is no point even in discussing if I'm right about this or the other points. All right. Let's take a look now closely at this first Shmamina. The first Shmamina was, Achat v'chayav, achat v'moton. One is coming from the point of view of collecting their mother's ketuvah, and the other one is coming from the point of view of b'din dichrin. There still is b'din dichrin v'lo atilin tzuya. That's what you were medayeg, and that's what Rav Ashi said, not necessarily. The truth is that achat v'chayav, achat v'moton is actually a machloket tanoim. Where do we see it's a machloket tanoim? The Tanya. Meitum achat b'chayav, v'achat v'moton. This case, our Mishnah. If you have two wives, one of whom died while the husband was alive and he was Yoresh, and therefore you would think that the Nin Dikrin goes into operation. The other one who dies after the husband dies, and therefore there's no Nin Dikrin, but there is the inheritance of the debt of the ketuvah against the property of the estate. What would be the halakha over there? So Ben Anas Omer, Yecholim Bnei Arishona, Lemor Livnei Hashniya. The first group can now say to the second group, listen, you guys are Bnei Ba'alat Chovatem, Tlu Ktuvat Imchem Utsu. You guys are going to have to collect now from your mother's ketuvah, like any other Baal Chov. Okay, take it, and then basically you are out of here, so that you've collected your thing. And obviously it's talking about over here, since it says utse'u, you're out, it means that there's nothing we don't have over here in Motar Dinah. So if we're talking about Nakhla above and beyond, there would never be a tse'u. Those, you'll come back in when we're finished, right? I mean, what do you mean, tse'u? They'll say, what, are you crazy? Why do we only get the debt that we're collecting against the estate? What happened to the Yerusha? We want our Yerusha. So if the Yarshei Rishonah are saying tse'u, they're saying, okay, the other 100,000 rand that are here, it's a nice estate, but we already paid you your 20,000 rand, and what's left was left from our mother's ketuvah. So goodbye. We hope you're happy. That's what Ben Nana says. Goodbye. Rabbi Akiva says, wait, goodbye. Kvar kofza nachala milifnei b'nei arishona v'nafla lifnei b'nei ashniya. Look, I mean, at the time, the moment that the husband now had died, during the lifetime of the mother, the second mother, it was already now, the nachala b'nin tichrin is already kaput. It left the b'nei arishona. And now it's set out there to be a nachla like any other nachla. Lifnei arishona also. Why? Apparently because he's saying there's no such thing as a ketuvah b'nin dichrin in such a case. I would assume there's no such thing as a ketuvah b'nin dichrin in such a case because it's uneven. Because one of the groups of children is collecting because their father had inherited their mother, and the other one is just a regular standard debt holder in the form of a ketuvah against the estate. So it seems to be a machlokus between Ben Anas and Rabbi Akiva in this exact case. So the Gemara is now going to work out what the shitos are. All right. So these are the words that Rabbi Akiva said. So my love, I mean, I would assume, says the Gemara, that b'hakam yiflegay. This is what they're arguing in Mar Savar. Achat b'chayav v'achat b'mlato yeshlam ketuvah b'nin dikrin. And therefore they're saying bye bye. Now obviously they're saying bye bye. It means that there's nothing left. There's no motar dinar. Because if there was even a dinar left, how can they say bye-bye? They could say, we'll meet you in court. We're going to split up whatever is left. So clearly there's zero left, according to Ben Nanas. Nonetheless, they're saying bye-bye. So what does that mean? It means that there is a ketuvah b'nin dikrin. Furthermore, it means that there's a ketuvah b'nin dikrin in this case, even though it's bye-bye, and you're not going to get any Yerusha at all. In which case we're concerned, but I thought ketuvah b'nin dikrin is never mevatel a Yerusha d'oraita. So therefore, it would be taking for granted also that a ketuvah is nasik mutar l'chaverta. Because otherwise you can't say bye-bye because we're going to be meeting you at least over the last buck that's in this thing. We can't certainly throw you out. So apparently Ben Anas is saying, look, there's certainly a ketuvah b'nin dikrin in this case. And Rabbi Akiva is saying, no, it's uneven. So Mar Savar Achat B'Chayav Achat B'Moto Yeshem Ketuvah B'Nin Dikrin Umar Savar Achat B'Chayav Achat B'Moto Einam Ketuvah B'Nin Dikrin. Omar Rabba, so Rabba said, you know, I'll tell you, Ashkaktino Rabbanu Debei Rab, I found the Chavruzas and the Beis HaMedrash were sitting around and discussing this, the Yatvi, the Kamri. You know what they said? They suggested that actually everybody agrees Kuli Amar Achat B'Chayav Achat B'Moto Yeshlem Ketuvah B'Nin Dikrin. The only thing that they're arguing about, Rabbi Akiva and Ben Anas, is this bye-bye. That Rabbi Akiva says, what are you talking about, bye-bye? There's no, how can you tell them bye? If you're telling them bye, it means there's nothing that's left for them to be talking it over as an actual Yerusha. But I thought if there's nothing left, then there's no Bnei Dibrei, because then where's the Yerusha D'Oraita? To which Ben Nanas is obviously responding, what do you mean? But they paid the debt. The debt of the Ketuvah, the second Ketuvah, was the Yerusha. Why would they need anything else? So maybe that's what they're arguing. They're not arguing about whether there's Ketuvah Bnei Dibrei. They're arguing about whether there's Ketuvah Bnei Dibrei when there's not going to be anything left after payment of the other Ketuvah, which is not a Ketuvah Bnei Dibrei, but a Ketuvah which is the debt Ketuvah, you see? So there's no reason to say the Machlokas Bananas Rabbi Akiva is about the actual fundamental theory of whether Ketuvah Bnei Dibrei has to be even on both sides for both groups of children, for both women. We're all agreed that there's still Ketuvah Bnei Dibrei. But what we argue about is, can there ever be a case in which the group that's going to be collecting the Bnei Dibrei can say to the other group, go ahead, go collect your darn Ketuvah over here with your debt and leave us alone, we don't want to see you again. Because that would imply that there's no motar dinar. Okay, so then that would, are we following this good? This is like subtle issues, but they're so much fun.
Yeah.
Is that, is there something very attractive about the whole discussion? It's subtle. So, you don't like it? See, on the iPod, I don't get the looks. It's one advantage. Well, we're going to have broadband soon enough. Okay.
We can hide from here. What do you mean? Everybody's coming back?
No, I was connecting you guys up to the Flu Network.
Oh.
We'll just be in both places. So that might be the alternative explanation. And of course, then it would have implications in terms of Baal Chov also, right? Because if you're telling me that the Ketuvah can't be Motar L'Chaverta, so then you're also telling me that any other debt will not be a Motar. In other words, in a case, let's say, where we do have an Nidre, but we have debts against the estate. So then you could also say, I mean, come on, you can't say there's nothing left. You guys together, as a group of heirs, paid up a debt against the estate, another debt. A guy had a contract against the father. So now you're going to say, well, there's nothing left in the estate, just enough for the two of us to collect our mother's ketubah. But we won't be able to split anything. That would be terrible. So you say, what's so terrible? You already paid up 500,000 rand. To pay up the debts that were against him. That's a Yerusha. But apparently if over here, the Tana Rabbi Akiva, who holds that you don't view a ketuvah as being motar, then Rabbi Akiva consistently would hold that a debt is also not a motar. There's nothing unique about a ketuvah, you're driving me crazy. There's nothing unique about a ketuvah, is there? It's just a debt. So apparently if a ketuvah can't be a motar, a debt can't be a motar. So, Huadin Labal Chov, Umar Savar, Ein Ketuvah Nasit Mutar L'Chavrata, Vuhuadin Labal Chov. That's what they were saying in the Beit HaMidrash when I walked in, said Rabbah. And you know what? I disagreed. I told them, look, you may be right about the Ketuvah. You may be right that that's what they're arguing here. But you jumped to conclusions when you said that Huadin Labal Chov. See, on the surface, it looks very reasonable. What's the difference between a ketuvah and any other chov? But I told them as follows, said Rabbi. I told them that actually, I would agree with you about the first part of your statement. I would say that, let me just find a place over here. Ramin Luana, I told them, I would say the Baal Chov Kulei Alma Gopligi to Havi Motar. Everybody would agree that the payment of an unrelated debt that comes out of the estate is obviously a Yerusha. Ki Pligi Biktuvah. They're only arguing over here about the actual event of a Ketuvah, where one is a Ketuvah and one is a Bnei Dibrei. So Rabbi Akiva is saying this is not like a normal debt over here. Because in this case, they are actually collecting the ketuvah itself. And therefore, there's no motar, because we look at each of them as collecting a ketuvah over here, and there's no nachala d'oraita, because when I pay my own ketubah, it's not that we get the money and then it goes out. It's the Yorshim who are getting the money. Obviously, there's a difference when the estate essentially is unaffected. So you're saying, what do you mean it's unaffected? But they're wearing different hats. Everybody before was wearing the hat of a Yoresh. Now they put on another hat, and they said, now I'm not a Yoresh, now I'm a collector of a debt of my mother's ketubah. Different hats are not the same thing as a motar. That may be what Rabbi Akiva is saying. Ultimately, some of the children are keeping the money, and the other children aren't getting the money. So, I mean, that's not the same as a motar, where all of the children get the money, and now it's paid out to somebody else, to a third party. There it's very clear that the ketuvah, that the Yerusha, the Oraita, is totally in effect, and now we all have together to pay a debt. Whereas in a case where we all have together pay a debt by taking it out of one pocket and putting it into another pocket, and the other pocket happens to be only some of the Yorshim, now that's not the same thing at all. So over there, indeed, it's more similar to a violation of the Yerusha, the Oraita. And I don't see you can jump to conclusions over here that it's the same case at all. It may well be that even Rabbi Akiva would agree when it comes to a Baal Kov that, yes, that's called a motar. But your basic assumption that the Machlokas ben Anas and Rabbi Akiva does not have to be a Machlokas about the fundamental issue, whether there is a ketuvah benin dichrin that's not balanced. In other words, only one group is collecting benin dichrin, the other one is collecting a normal ketuvah. That's true, I agree with you. There may be no Machlokas about that at all. The question over here is only legabe motar dinar. And the other point you made, I also disagree with, though, which is that motar dinar would be a question even about a third-party debt. Not true. Third-party debt is definitely considered to be a motar dinar. All right? Getting a little bit more complex as we go, but the yesodot are beautiful. They're built up over here layer after layer. It's a very polished fashion. It's beautiful how the Gemara has constructed it. With three separate steps in the Shema Aminat, and the recognition of how each one of these is a bit more subtle, and therefore may or may not necessarily be so, and we could find a machlokas about one layer and not about the other layers. So it's like a diamond over here. With this. I don't like the aesthetics of it at all. Maybe when you review.
I'm 70% of the way there. We don't want to have your cup.
No, it's not cooked, it's just review.
Yeah.
So continue. Keep playing the ketubah. Market law Rav Yosef. So Rav Yosef, however, attacks this latter approach. He says, I don't understand the language then. Why does Rabbi Akiva say, Ihachi, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kvar kavtsa nachala. What kind of language is that? The nachla has already popped away. You can forget about ketuvah benin dichrin. That's the way I read it. I mean, according to you, that the question isn't whether there is or not benin dichrin. The question is whether ketuvah naaseit motar l'chavrata. So why does he say kvar kavtsa? He should have said simply, look, im yesh motar dinar. That's all. I mean, that's his point. He's not concerned about the fact that it has to be in a case where only one of them is coming with a ketuvah benin dichrin, that now we go back to standard nachla. That sure sounds like what he's saying to me. If all he wanted to say was that we need a motar dinar despite the fact that there's another ketuvah, then say so. Say, you can't say. You can't say bye-bye. There needs to be at least a dinar. That's the point that you're making. Make the point and say, im yesh motar dinar, fine. But if not, there's no say. I don't like this then. Actually, I say, Elam Rav Yosef, the truth is, the machloket is a fundamental machloket, just as you initially suggested. And they're actually arguing about whether ketuvah benin dichrin obtains in cases where it's uneven. They're arguing about ba'achat b'chayah ve'achat b'moto kamitzkeh, where one woman died during the husband's life, and one woman dies after. That's the machloket. And I know that there's such a machloket. See, if we'd be arguing theoretically, we can argue from today till doomsday. But I can show you that an argument like that definitely exists. So why make this into something other than what it is? I'll show you. Here, take a look. Hani tanoi kani tanoi. This machloket tanoim reflects perfectly, the way I'm learning, another machloket tanoim. The Tanya, in a braita we have, a case where Nasata Rishana Vameta, he marries one wife, and that wife dies, and then Nasata Shnia, he marries a second wife, and then he dies, Umeitu. But in Banea Shalzo, Liachar Mita, Venotlin Ktuvat Iman. So all that happens over here is that the children come along, which I assume means the children of the second wife come along, and they are Balechov, so they collect against the estate Ktuvat Iman. Period. Do you notice that he says not a word about Bnei HaRishona? You're darn right, because there are no Bnei HaRishona, because there is no such thing as a Ktuvah Bnei Dikrin. If the other group isn't going to be getting a Ktuvah Bnei Dikrin, it's not fair. It's Atilin Tsuye. It strikes them as being not correct. That's Rabbi Shimon Shita, I guess. And then, says Rabbi Yosef, then comes along now, that's Tanakam Rishita. Then comes along now Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon Omer, why? Why is that? Why is there no Rishona? Im yesh motar dinar, elo notnin ktuvat iman, ve elo notnin ktuvat iman. V'im lav chokim b'shaveh. If there's a ktuvah that is still going to be able to be paid up after we pay up the ktuvah of the shniyah, and leave over a motar dinar, how could there be such a thing? Oh, because the first ones will receive a ktuvah b'nin dikrin, as long as there's a motar dinar. So apparently the Tana Kama says, I don't care how much money is left. We don't give ktuvah b'nin dikrin if one of them is getting only the normal ktuvah and not a ktuvah b'nin dikrin. Comes along Rabbi Shimon to say, no, it's true that there's still ktuvah b'nin dikrin, but you need to make sure, as you do in every ktuvah b'nin dikrin, that there's motar dinar. So, says Rabbi Yosef, do you not see that here we have straight out machloket, not about whether you need motar dinar the way you guys are trying to kvetch, but about the ikur question. Yes or no to ktuvat b'nin dikrin in cases where one and only one group is getting it, whereas the other group is collecting a normal ktuvat. That's the question here. That's how I interpret it. So this is what Rabbi Shimon says. So my lav, let me talk this out to you, says Rabbi Yosef, in case you haven't followed until now. So my lav, b'ha kamiflagay. They're undoubtedly arguing in the following. Demar sabar achat b'chayav v'achat b'mato yesh lam ktuvat b'nin dikrin. How else do you understand the machlokas between the Tanakam and Rabbi Shimon? Says Ramavan, I could read it another way. I could say, lo. I could say, actually, kuleyama achat bechayav echat b'mato yesh lem ktuvah b'nin dikrin. Actually, it's not that they're arguing about whether there's ktuvah b'nin dikrin. There is ktuvah b'nin dikrin. The machlokas over here is a different question. The question over here is whether you need to have your shteik to vote in case of any ktuvah b'nin dikrin, where you do need to have the motar dinar, whether this needs to be out of actual real estate, because after all,